The Black Show Arts Hour on Wandsworth Radio, where you listen with your ears and not your mouth.
You're listening to the Black Show Arts Hour. I've got Matt with me this show, and this show we're going to be talking about a little bit about what's come out with Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, which is what it's called, Matt.
It is, and it's the first public previews are in less than a week.
Yep. We're going to be talking about the photos that have come out and talking about how we've actually talked about it before on the show. This is going to be a bit of a second edition to what we've already spoken about in a Arts Thing of the Week before. We're going to be talking a little bit about podcasts, and then at the end of the show, we're going to be hearing some new writing from one of our recent new writing nights. But to kick things off, the first thing that we always do is this.
The Matt Boothman Film Review. So good, I put my trousers back on.
Matt, what are you reviewing for us this week?
We're going to do Green Room.
Okay.
Which is quite a small release in a fortnight that has had things like X-Men Apocalypse in it. And considering that I did a big superhero blockbuster last time, I thought I'd do a bit of counter-programming.
Good. Yes, we like that.
So Green Room it's a movie by Jeremy Saulnier, who the only other movie I've ever heard of his is called Blue Ruin. I haven't seen it, so I don't know. He's a small director. I've not really seen anything of his. Green Room it starts off as like a mumblecore movie.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know this genre?
Not really.
It's sort of like anything that you've seen with Jesse Eisenberg in it.
It's probably
mumblecore.
Okay, yeah. So Adventureland?
Stuff like... Yes, that's like the archetypical mumblecore movie.
Okay.
So it's about a punk band. They're on the road. They're all really poor. They have to like siphon gas from other people's cars to keep their tour bus going. And they potentially slightly inadvisably take a gig out in the woods in a place run by what turn out to be neo-Nazis.
Oh, wow. That's a... turn.
It is a little bit. So, and it sort of they witness something after the gig that they shouldn't have.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns from a mumblecore movie into a slasher horror.
Wow. Okay.
It's quite a tonal shift. Like, I knew that it was going that way before I started watching it. So I don't know if you just watched it going, oh, this is a movie about a punk band. I don't know what sort of reaction you'd have. And it basically becomes this sort of almost tactical story where the band end up kind of besieged in the green room of the venue by these people who want them dead for what they've seen.
Okay.
And it sort of plays out almost like something like The Raid, like a sort of SWAT cop movie.
Sure.
With sort of the people holed up in the room and the people trying to get in and sort of occasional sallies out of the room and... sort of encountering people on the way out and sort of ending up back in, holed up back in, minus one or two band members. And it's kind of businesslike. Like, there's desperation on both sides. The band obviously just want to get out of there and not die. And the venue owners, let's call them, want to cover their tracks. Basically, one of their own has done something very bad. And they all band together to try to cover for him.
Okay.
And the band are the loose end. And so it's very violent, and there's lots of gore, but
mm-hmm.
nobody really makes any really stupid moves. Like, I've not watched a lot of horror, but my kind of impression of it is like the very stereotypical Cabin in the Woods movies,
mm-hmm.
where you're just screaming at the people on the screen, don't go down there.
Yeah, don't go upstairs.
Yeah,
you can't escape.
Destroy the painting, it's clearly evil. Whereas there's none of that in this movie. They're all making choices that are often made out of desperation and often like you can see that they're going to end badly, but you don't feel like they're stupid choices on behalf of the characters.
That's refreshing, I think.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the time,
that trope.
Yeah, a lot of the time, like movies, like obviously, Scream's a really obvious choice in terms of that genre, where people just make terrible, terrible decisions. Like, go outside, or, you know, like, answer the doorbell. Don't answer the doorbell. You never answer the doorbell. You don't pick up the phone, you don't answer the doorbell. So no.
If you're in a cabin in the woods, you stand back to back holding knives.
Yeah, and wait for it to come to you.
Yeah. So, I mean, it is still a horror movie, but the horror comes from kind of the dramatic irony that the audience knows stuff that the characters don't.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got more information than them. So we can see them making the best decision they can with the information that they've got, not necessarily knowing all the way through that that they're definitely marked for death.
Sure.
Partly because the main antagonist is so very scarily reasonable. Mm-hmm. And this is the main antagonist played by Patrick Stewart.
Which is a weird role, I think, for him. And I don't think it's something that anyone's ever seen him do. Is that correct?
I think that's true, yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's mainly known for things like Captain Picard in Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
As it happens, Anton Yelchin from the new Star Trek is also in it as one of the members of the band. Okay. But yeah, so Patrick Stewart as a neo-Nazi gang leader, who'd have seen
Who'd have thought that?
Yeah, but he's very, like I say, very reasonable and very businesslike. And for a lot of it, from the band's point of view, he's just this voice on the other side of the door saying, I'm the venue manager. All I want is for us all to get away from this and nobody to get in trouble with the police. Please just come out, give me the gun. And he seems very, you know, a lot of the time we know, because we've seen him have conversations with his with the rest of his troops,
mm-hmm.
that they're not getting out of there alive if he's got anything to do with it. But
yeah.
They don't know that.
And death will be swift.
So he really sells kind of how reasonable that guy is. It's kind of... the skinheads are... They're bad, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
They're neo-Nazis.
Like all skinheads are, yeah.
But they pull together to protect one of their own in kind of a parallel to the band having to pull together to survive.
Okay.
We were thinking about maybe talking about other villains like that, the sort of the weird villain casting that you don't expect. But
yeah.
Actually, you drew a parallel with another movie that really
yeah.
resonated.
So when we were talking about this, the only real thing that I could think about, because I watch a lot of horror films, and a lot of the time, all of the villains or the protagonists are people that you expect to be bad. But my thing was Wolf Creek and... Oh God, I've had a complete mental blank and I can't remember. So Wolf Creek is about backpackers in Australia, and there is this horrible character, which is sort of based on Ivan Milat, if anyone knows that historical story of him actually killing people in the outback. So this is a character based on him, and he is very calm and brings in the backpackers and tries to help them. But really, his motive is awful, and he's an awful, awful, scary character.
But again, because I've seen this as well, he seems very grounded and reasonable the whole time.
Yeah.
Like, he's not a psycho killer in the Mm-mm. same way that none of the bad guys in Green Room are psycho killers.
Yeah.
He's just, I mean, the guy in Wolf Creek, you can debate about what his motives are.
Mm.
He doesn't really see, he's kind of a motiveless killer.
Yes.
But he's not a psycho slasher.
No, he's quite reasonable. And I think that's more scary a lot of the time in this genre, where you've got someone who you're like, oh yeah, I kind of agree with what you... No, I shouldn't agree with that. That's not okay. So yeah, I think that's really the only parallel that I can draw to this, having not seen Green Room.
Yeah, so similarly, again, they're as far from sort of the psycho slasher killer horror trope as you can get,
mm.
because they're basically just... They pull together because they don't want one of their own to get done for murder.
Yeah, yeah.
And in the course of that, do a lot more murders.
What are the performances like? Is there anyone of note that you have seen and stuff?
The ones that I was aware of before, Anton Yelchin and Patrick Stewart, as I mentioned. Alia Shawkat is a member of the band. She was in Arrested Development.
Oh, yeah.
And Imogen Poots, mm-hmm. who... I don't know if I've actually seen her in anything, but she's in a lot of those mumblecore movies.
Ah, right.
She's kind of a face in that sort of genre.
Yeah.
And then some sort of, at least to me, relative unknowns.
Mm. In terms of, because I know that you're not a huge horror fanatic, how would you rate it against other stuff that you've seen? I think, like, the most recent thing, well, probably the only horror film that we ever did on this show was It Follows,
yeah,
which is completely different. And I thought, like, as someone who watches quite a bit of horror, I thought that was quite a standalone film. Would you say the same about Green Room?
Kind of. I mean, it's what marks it out from It Follows is it there's absolutely no supernatural element to it at all. Like, there's no ghosts, there's no ghouls, there's no monster. It's literally just bad humans trying to kill someone. Trying to kill some people. So, I don't know. It kind of reminded me a little bit of 10 Cloverfield Lane, which we talked about a few weeks ago.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
In that it's very bottled up in a single place. And it's sort of about the threat there, although the violence is very much more on the surface here than it was in Cloverfield Lane.
In terms of gore, how are we going? Bad? Bad gore?
Fleeting glimpses of very bad gore.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, you see people die?
You definitely see people die.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You definitely see people get maimed.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I think the one thing that... I think Ellie... We were talking about this with Ellie, who is obviously on this show quite a lot. She asked you if it was, like, Saw. She was like, is the person in the room the killer? Is he dead or alive? Which I don't think is a thing. But when I hear about, like, a horror film that's just set in a room, I'm like, Saw. First Saw. Which is a bloody brilliant film. Like, so good in terms of horror genre.
Such a good script, let down so badly by the performances.
Yeah, I know, but it's still so good.
Yeah, like, there's a parallel there. In that, again, it's Saw is another one of those horror movies that has no sort of ghosts or ghouls or anything. It's just people. Although it does have a bit closer to what I would think of as like a psycho killer. He has the guy in from the first Saw, at least you can't really tell what his motive is.
Yeah, he's
you
just
get
crazy.
It more in the future films.
Yeah,
but,
yeah, and they shouldn't have made all those future films.
And there are Green Room goes a bit wider than the one room. Mm-hmm. Like, there's the rest of the venue and the sort of the surrounding woods as well that you get into in the end game of the movie.
Can we do a spoiler and preface this with there will be a spoiler?
Spoiler alert.
I always like to know in horror films, because it really annoys me when there is just one person who lives, and it's always, say like, you know, take Scream and everyone dies. All her friends die. If you've not seen Scream, then what are you doing with your life, really, is my question to you. But I really don't like it when there is just that one person who's like, I'm fine, now I have to live with my life of having seen all my friends die. What does Green Room do?
Two survivors.
Okay.
Only
one
from the band.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, see, I'm not sure if I like that. Did that annoy you?
I maybe not so much because I haven't seen so many of the movies. I'm aware of it as a trope that there is the one survivor and it's usually a girl.
Yes. Always a girl.
Yep, the final girl.
Yeah. That's why I like Wolf Creek. Because you don't know if she dies or not.
That's true.
Yeah, it's a good film. I really like Wolf Creek, mostly because I'm Australian. It makes me feel kind of tough. I'm like, this happened in my country. Like,
this could have happened to me. What would I have done?
Survived, Matt. Always.
Yeah. I mean, what kind of struck me about Green Room is it's there's a what feels to me like a complete lack of any moralizing in it. Like, I feel like in a lot of horror movies, there's kind of an implicit thing that all these people are dying because they're being punished for something. Mm-hmm. Like, you see them do stuff in the first act and then they suffer for it later.
Yeah.
And like, the worst thing that you can say that these guys do in Green Room is like, they siphon off other people's petrol to keep the tour bus running.
Yeah.
And they take a gig somewhere that they could probably have guessed was going to be a bit violent.
Uh-huh.
But what else could they do? They had no money. They needed to play somewhere.
And they just loved music. They loved punk so much that they just needed. Yep. Felt like they needed to play.
I mean, they did play. They do play like an anti-fascist song in front of their neo-Nazi audience. But there's never any suggestion that that's why they're all getting murdered. It's because they saw something they shouldn't have done.
Yeah.
So it never feels like they're getting punished for something that they did earlier in the movie, which in a way makes it even bleaker. It's just like they were in the wrong place at the wrong time. They saw something they shouldn't, and now they all have to die.
It does sound bleak, and I really want to see it. And, well, mostly because I love horror, and I would really like to see Patrick Stewart in this role because I've heard so much about it. Did you enjoy it?
I was never bored. I was on the edge of my seat for a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
I was never sitting there rolling my eyes, going, "Oh God, you know, I've seen all this before."
Yeah. So, oh, that's really good. We'll convert you to horror.
Yeah.
Soon. It'll happen. I'll make you see some more before the year is out.
All right. Give me some recommendations.
I will.
I'll catch up. See what's on Netflix.
Maybe we'll do some retro horror film
reviews.
Yeah,
we should.
That would be a great idea. Fortnite's time, Matt. Do you know what's coming out?
I do not.
Oh.
I'm afraid. Partly well, because we're recording this a bit early.
We are. We are slightly early on this recording. Matt's not prepared.
Yeah, and so I don't know. I don't know what's coming out this coming week because it's not this coming week yet for me.
No. But if you have any ideas or suggestions, then you can always tweet us at Blackshaw Update or at your own Twitter handle, Matt, which is...
At Matt Boothman.
Yeah.
Booth as in telephone booth, man as in man.
Yeah, always with that one. So yeah, let us know what you would like Matt to see and we could maybe do that in a fortnight on the next Blackshaw Arts Hour.
Definitely.
Now I'm going to play you a piece of poetry by Daisy Thurston Ghent. This is called I Haunt This City With Intention.
I haunt this city with intention, but that doesn't make me any less of a ghost. I'm drunk, and I'm racing a fox across the platform of Kensal Green Station. And I'm totally winning, except no one's there to see me. And I've got a headache like too many late nights spent writing in train stations, empty benches, everyone else was on time. But I'm not from this side of town, so my sense of direction let me down. Geography was never my strong suit, and this city is detailed like a blueprint. My map is covered in marks like it's a draft. Perhaps that's why I keep rubbing out. My heart is a terrible etch-a-sketch. Before I notice, I'm off again. Itchy feet, I call it. But I know you disagree. Because you're the one who can't sleep because you let me leave. Tongue in cheek from a loved one, reluctant to wish me on my way. It's no good just staying with me, Daisy. Sometimes you should actually be here, too. That one hurt. More than backpack straps. In truth, you're not the first I've spun the globe away from. I don't mean any harm, it's not you. Sometimes I just need to run. But kisses after months apart feel like unfolding origami secrets that have formed in our creases, taking me back to the first time we drew on car windows. I liked you so much, I was prepared to say I love you. That daft turn of phrase that curls our toes like the pages of worn-out cheap romance novels abandoned on a hostel swap shelf that turns my blood to black ice. That bad luck bastard, that old friend. Darling, there is so much warmth in your breath. Don't tell me lust ain't a radiator, it comes with an off switch. This is bigger. I want us to love with all of the contrariety of a Jackson Pollock painting that I can frame for evidence of the mess we make. You are every bumpy landing in my cheap airline heart. I've got this pressure in my head like I'm yet to touch down from a long haul. And I've heard people say that home is where the heart is. Well, if that's the case, then right now my home is a room full of poets. And a few months ago it was a bus hurtling across the dusty Turkish countryside, and soon after it was brushing my teeth in a stranger's t-shirt beneath the stars. In the last 6 months, my home was 20 different beds. My heart has made its home the road simply by having its own pair of restless feet. My body clatters across this land, rattling away happily like an arcade pinball. Home is where the heart is. Well, then maybe that makes me homeless, because I notice I keep giving mine away. But no, I'm trying to stay settled and not fidget so much. Keep my bum stuck to one seat. Learn the timings of the underground. Plant my roots here for once. Instead of living daisy chain, carefree, chasing my own ends. Eagerly plucked, warm with pride, then cast aside, a tangled heap, you look withered, flower charred, what's up? I told myself to stop digging around for answers in the dirt of the big wide world. Instead, look for someone who wants to fill a whole garden with you, and never cut the grass. You are so easy to come back to. You make a home feel like one.
That was Daisy Thurston Ghent reading her poem, I Haunt This City With Intention. The next thing that we are going to move off into is a little bit of something we've already talked about on the Black Show Arts Hour, which is Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, which is very exciting for a lot of people. Myself kind of included. I've seen all of the Harry Potter films, never read the books.
No shame in it.
No, I don't feel shame.
Were they a big thing in Australia?
we're not the... Yeah, they were.
Okay.
I remember my library teacher reading the first chapter of the first book, and I thought it was really boring, which is probably not great. Sorry, JK. But yeah, so Harry Potter and the Cursed Child is going to be playing in a week, did we say?
Less than a week, the first public preview. Yeah, it doesn't technically open for a little bit longer after that. So anybody who's got tickets for the previews will be seeing something that might still be slightly in progress.
Ah, sure. But so I think it's coming out for the public in July.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But I would be very surprised if the people going to see those public previews don't start kicking up a Twitter storm about it.
Oh, of course. Well, we were saying, you were saying that this is probably going to be the biggest...
I wouldn't be surprised if this because the play text is being released as well, and people are treating that almost like a new Harry Potter book coming out.
Yeah.
And even though J.K. Rowling didn't write it, she was involved, but it's been written by Jack Thorne.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be surprised if this is like the biggest selling play text ever after the great complete works of Shakespeare.
Which is a big call, but I agree with you.
Because I can't think of another play that people who don't normally go to the theatre would buy the text of.
No, me neither.
But people who can't make it to the show but want to know what happens next in Harry Potter are going to buy it.
Oh, of course. I might even buy it. I probably won't. anyway, if you have the internet, then you definitely would have seen the fact that photos were released, cast photos of the people who are going to be playing the characters in this production of Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. I looked at the pictures and I was not surprised. I was surprised at how on point I think they were, in terms of there was one picture that was Harry Potter, Ginny Weasley and their child.
Albus. Albus Severus.
Yes. Harry Potter, the actor playing him, looks like Harry Potter. Ginny looks like Ginny. And then there is the debate about Hermione.
Hashtag Black Hermione.
Yeah, which is quite a weird debate to be having in 2016, I think. But my thinking behind it was, and I think J.K. Rowling has come out and said this as well, there has been, would you say it's an uproar? Would you say people were...
I would say there's been lively debate.
Yeah, a lively debate over the fact that Hermione is portrayed as black in this production. And J.K. Rowling has come out and said, well... I didn't say she wasn't, so why not? Which I think is interesting, and I'd like to think that it hasn't been done for effect for this production. Do you think that it would have been done for effect?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I think for effect is quite a loaded term in this case, because it has these implications of did they cast a black person for... because she was black rather than because she was the better performer.
Exactly.
And I'm pretty sure I may have made this up, but I'm pretty sure I've heard quotes from the casting people and the director saying they cast her because she was the best one. Mm. And obviously Rowling, as you say, has supported it by saying Hermione is described in the books as having buck teeth and frizzy hair, and they never mention anything about it, the books never mention anything about the colour of her skin.
Mm.
And people have been imagining a black Hermione on the internet for a lot longer than since the casting of this play was announced.
Yeah.
There's fan art of her and all those sorts of things. People noticed that her skin colour was not specified in the books and have done what are known on the internet as headcanons.
Really?
Accordingly. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, look it up. Look it up on Tumblr. Tumblr's the place to go for all the weird fan theories.
We might tweet some links or maybe link to this from our Blackshaw social accounts just to highlight those Tumblr articles.
Sounds like a plan.
But yeah, no, I think it's really good. But I sort of wanted to talk to you about it in terms of being a writer. Do you ever, like when you write a character... Do you think about skin colour Or do you just write from as who they are as a person?
It's something I'm becoming increasingly aware of.
Mm.
Partly because I'm starting to consciously decide to follow a more diverse set of people on my various internet networks.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm seeing more of other people's lived experience from other backgrounds than mine.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely something that when I think about a character that is in something I'm writing, what I will do is I will take my my initial image of them, and I will try to interrogate it and say, how much of the way I've imagined that person in terms of what gender they are or what colour their skin is, or anything like that, sort of what body type they have even.
That's interesting that gender comes into it as well.
I have to try and think, how much of that is because that is what the character needs to be to make the story work, and how much of that is there because that's just my unconscious default in my brain?
Yeah, your background influences what you think and what you write about, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think it comes through even more in kind of background characters that will have kind of one or two lines in the background of something that you might... say it's a telephone operator or a secretary, my default, to my shame, will often be to make that person female.
Mm.
And then I'll have to interrogate it and go, why have I done that? Is that just because, is it because they need to be, because the main character needs to react to them a certain way? Or is it because I have an unconscious bias in my head that says people in service roles are always female?
Mm.
And so I will try to sort of flip things around if I think I've done something because of a bad bias.
Yeah. That's really interesting. I wonder if, obviously, I think J.K. Rowling didn't think that the books were going to be as big as they are when she wrote them.
I'm sure she did by book 3 or 4.
Oh, yeah, but... definitely. But especially, like, you know, when she came up with the character of Hermione, I don't think she would have ever pictured her being under this kind of scrutiny, being cast in a production. So I wonder if it goes that far back. I don't think it does, personally. But I do find it interesting that she's not actually referred to as or interrogated as much as a female character would be. I wonder if it would be different if it had have been a male who wrote her as a character, if there would have been more emphasis on how she looked and if she was pretty or she wasn't pretty or she, you know, that kind of stuff.
I suspect there probably would have been.
I definitely think so.
It's interesting, because this is a regular criticism of J.K. Rowling, is that she will decide after the fact certain details about her characters, like a few years ago when she announced that Dumbledore, the headmaster, is gay.
Did she?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Did you not?
No.
So this is, it's word of God. The author has told us this character is a gay man.
Right.
But it's not actually there in the books.
Okay.
You can read it that way. You can certainly interpret it that way, but it's not explicitly there on the page. You can't say definitively that is a gay character. You can only say that because the author has decided to tell us that he is. So, you know, if she died straight after writing the books, then we wouldn't know for sure. We would still be speculating about it.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of interesting that you can actually go back through the text, and it's not explicit that Hermione is a person of colour, but it is not explicit that she's not.
No, but it's up for reinterpretation,
I suppose. Yeah.
For people who have read those books and now they see the pictures that have come out in the last couple of weeks, potentially they go back and you shouldn't read it as a different text because colour doesn't matter. But I wonder if that has an influence. I wonder if that will have an influence with people who read it, who've never read it and seen the play before they read the books, you know?
I hope for those audiences and for people who have read the books before that anybody who's read the books and assumed that Hermione is white, given what we have now realised is no information.
Yeah,
I would hope that people will sort of look back and go now and interrogate in the same way as we were talking about with coming up with new characters.
Yeah,
interrogate. Well, why did I assume that she was?
Exactly. Yeah,
given it's a that really. It doesn't
I,
say so.
I think it's a really good thing, and I think it's a really good debate to have, and it's a really good way to change your thinking about how you think about what you read and what you take away from different characters and how you can apply things that you don't necessarily think about all the time as say, a white person. I mean, I see characters as inherently white because that's my background. I think it's interesting to take a different stance and step back from that and go, hang on, I need to think about this more, which is what you've said in writing. I think it's interesting, and I'm very excited about not seeing Harry Potter and the Cursed Child because I don't think I'll ever get tickets. Ever.
I think also it's interesting what you said just right at the very beginning of this segment, talking about the photos, that Harry Potter looks like Harry Potter, Ginny Weasley looks like Ginny Weasley. Because what struck me when I looked at those photos is they look like older versions of the people who played them in the films.
Yes, and I think that's
the striking difference, is that Hermione doesn't look like an older version of Emma Watson.
Yes.
I think almost that is what's baking people's noodles almost more than any other part of it.
Yeah, totally. You've already got this preconceived thing of what you think they look like, irregardless. Because I'm sure that people who read the books and then saw the film were like, oh, that doesn't look like person I was picturing in my head when I was reading it, but I'll go along with it anyway. But this has been a bit of a drastic change to especially the film, so I think that's why people are like, what?
People don't like change.
I like change. Yeah. Most people don't like change. that was us talking about Harry Potter. You should go and see it if you can
get tickets in like 2020.
Is that how long it's gonna...
I don't know. I'm pulling a number out of the air, but probably.
It'll probably be around for the next 50 years. It'll probably still be on until we die. So, you know, hopefully we'll have a chance to go along and see it. And now I'm going to play you a piece of poetry by Owen Collins. This is called Nationalise the Swans.
This poem is called Nationalise the Swans. It is about the royal family, who generally I don't mind so much. There are a couple of things that annoy me about the royal family, like their existence being one of them, but I can sort of live with it for now. What does annoy me about is the swans. The Queen owns all the swans in England, and only she is allowed to... I mean, I imagine her family are as well. Only she is allowed to eat swans. Basically, I'm annoyed that they get to eat swan and I don't. And I just think it's very unfair that she gets to own the swans, and I think the swans should belong to everyone. Hence the name of the poem, Nationalise the Swans. Nationalise the UK's swans. Don't leave them all to Liz. Why should she have to have them all? She's got too much as it is. Her Majone's quite enough, come on, in Windsor and the Mall. And then there's other Crown Estates. Does she need the swans as well? Nationalise the UK's swans that the palace gates will call, so they belong to the nation, common treasury for all. Let Parliament plead, let the swans go free, let them float of their own free will. And the privatised plumed privilege, have the taxpayers pay their bill. In case you didn't pick up on it, Bill is also the name for the swan's beak. Very clever pun, that one. Nationalise the UK swans, let's act with compassion and reason. Take the signia's signets for the people and commit avian treason. Don't let them be the plaything of the rich and the deluded. We are the 99% and we want the swans included. Nationalise the UK swans, the Queen just doesn't need them. Let us shout as one, liberate the swan and let on the Thames flow freedom. Because swans have dignity, swans have grace, swans are strong and vicious. Swans are elegant, swans are opulent and frankly look delicious.
We've just taken you down a little bit of a poetry route this evening on the show. That was Owen Collins with his poem, Nationalise the Swans. So, Matt, we are a podcast.
Yeah, we are.
We have been a podcast for quite some time now.
Yeah.
We made the move over to the internet from live radio.
You can find us on iTunes. You can find us on Podbean.
Yes, you can Google the Blackshaw Arts Hour. And I think we come up.
Yeah. I'm sure we do.
We're pretty specific. But... in all of this podcasting and really getting into it, I listen to podcasts all the time. My favourite is This American Life, just for those of you playing at home. I've been listening to a breadth of podcasts, and I'd like to spend a little bit of time telling you about my favourite one at the moment, which is called The Mortified Podcast. It is a part of Radiotopia, which is like an umbrella of a whole bunch of really great stuff. There's The Heart, This American Life comes under it, all basically American ones. But Mortified is fantastic because it is so simple yet so effective. So it's all recorded live on stage, And it's people reading word from word out of their childhood diaries.
Oh, with wow.
No, they don't rewrite it. They just read it.
In front of a live audience.
In front of a live audience. Obviously, it's called Mortified because that is mortifying. Because I don't know what you were like when you were like 15, but I was horrible. And
Do they do these in the UK? Because I feel like that's very that's a very un-British thing to do, to open up that much in front of strangers.
Oh, they do. They do. So they're predominantly based in the USA, but they do a couple in Europe and they do one in London occasionally every sort of couple of months. But they're absolutely brilliant because the one thing that you don't realize when you're a kid, or, you know, when you're a teenager going through all this, like, you know, a lot of sex stuff, a lot of first kind of stuff, a lot of school stuff, which is horrific, you don't realize at the time that everything you're feeling, everyone else is feeling. Like, it's all, like, so much feeling. And all the people that are on stage live are reading out just feelings, which is not things adults do. Like, I don't, you know, we learn to repress those things. I do. Do you repress your feelings, Matt?
I feel like I do, yeah.
Yeah, you don't put them out there for the world to see. Exactly. I'm Australian, but I still repress. I've still learnt to repress. I think that's something you learn to do when you, like, turn 20 or something. But if you want to, like, if you want to laugh, then go and listen to Mortified, because it is one of the funniest things. I had to turn it off on the train the other day because I was the crazy person laughing on the train listening to headphones. I'm very upset, actually, because they're doing one in London on Saturday, the 16th of July. And I can't go because I'm going to be on holiday.
Oh.
But you should all go.
So you would do this if you had the opportunity?
Oh, my God, yes. Like, I've got a wealth of content back home in Australia that I'm going to get my mum to bring over when she comes at the end of this month. So I might even trial something on this very show.
So you're gonna go to effort in order to embarrass yourself?
Yeah, because I wasn't a great writer, but I feel like it could be hilarious.
And also it was true, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's like the most truest I could ever speak. Because, you know, obviously the repression and stuff that I'm doing now is, you know. But so this is completely sparked, like, me being in love with this podcast and also other podcasts. But no, Matt, what I wanted to ask you was, do you have a favourite podcast at the moment or from the past?
Yeah. So I have a favourite podcast network. Is that a cheat?
No.
So like a Radiotopia kind of umbrella. So yeah. They only have two, and with another one coming soon.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the Night Vale Presents Network.
Okay.
So their flagship is Welcome to Night Vale, which is a fortnightly podcast formatted as a local community radio broadcast from a weird American desert town.
Right.
Where weird stuff happens all the time.
Uh-huh.
Which I really appreciate. And they've just launched quite recently a second podcast called Alice Isn't Dead, which is a serial story about a woman trucking across the USA looking for her wife who she thought was dead, and it turns out she's not.
Oh, wow.
And they're about to launch a new one. The name of which temporarily escapes me, but it's a series of, they seem like meditation tapes, like guided meditations.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, they're taking you through a story about yourself.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They do lots of really kind of slightly off-kilter, weird, askew stuff that kind of really fits my taste.
You're slightly askew.
Yeah.
I think that's the most interesting thing that I found about podcasts over the last couple of years is the fact that they are basically just audio. And I think people are like, you know, radio, I get audio. You don't get audio unless you listen to a whole bunch of podcasts, because there is the scope of stuff that you can do with audio and in a podcast format is just incredible.
Yeah, there are people doing stuff on podcasts that you would probably not really consider doing on live radio.
No, and also like stuff that you would do on, they're doing on podcasts that you wouldn't even do on TV, even if it is a really visual thing. And people are sort of trying to understand, like, there's podcasts out there that, there is one called Dan Carlin's Hardcore History, which is him just, he's not a professor, he's not, you know, he's just talking from himself and what his knowledge of history is, going back ages and ages ago, and some of his podcasts are 4.5 hours long. Wow. And they're, you know, one of the most downloaded things on the internet. And it's like, that's incredible. Like, you couldn't make a documentary that's 4 hours long and have people that interested in it.
No, you'd have to see, it would be something serialized, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
would be
completely.
Like a four 1 hour specials on the BBC or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I love podcasts. Yeah. Basically, that's what I'm trying to say in this segment. Anyway, moving on. If any of you who are listening has subscribed to Blackshaw's newsletter, you would know a wealth of information. One thing in which we turned six, Matt.
We did.
We had a birthday in May, but because we were just finishing up Wandsworth Arts Festival, we sort of didn't make a big deal out
we
of
kind
it.
We kind of let it pass us, but we celebrated the fifth birthday in
we did.
Some style.
We did last
so
year.
So we thought we wouldn't make a huge deal out of this one.
Yeah, we did a show instead. We did Black Shark. It was fine.
Yeah, we'll always be working.
Yeah. So we are now six, and excitingly as well, as you know, we love new writing, and we do a new writing night we have done at the Horse and Stables for the last 5 years nearly.
Yeah, we've been every other month.
Every other month, very long running. Excitingly, the next one is going to be at the Hen and Chickens in Islington.
Which is a great venue.
It's a fantastic venue. Still a pub. You can still get beer.
You can.
It's okay.
Yeah, it's exactly the same. It's a pub with a theatre above it.
Yeah.
Except that it's in Islington, and the Hen and Chicken's got a really great rep for comedy, particularly, mm-hmm. but they do a lot of theatre as well.
Yeah. So we're going to be moving there in July. So the next new writing night will be in July at the Hen and Chicken's on Tuesday the 12th. So don't go to the Horse and Stables because we won't be there. So come to the Hen and Chicken's for that.
The Horse and Stables is lovely and you'll get some lovely beers.
Yes.
But we won't be there.
No. And that's the most important thing is that you need to come and see our new writing night because it's great. Now, this is a piece that was performed at our showcase new writing night a few months ago. It's called Parents and was written by Dan Weatherer.
You alright?
Hiya.
Mind if I take this one? Been waiting long?
About 20 minutes. I think there's another couple in there. Freya's parents, I think.
Oh, not sure who that is. Oh, Bethany talks about her friends all the time, but it's in one ear and out the other. I mean, you know how it is, yeah? Some names stick, some don't. I mean, don't get me wrong, yeah? I want to keep track of who's who, but after 12 hours at the warehouse, it's kind of difficult to keep up with her. I mean, she could chat for England, that one. So which one's yours?
I've got two, actually. Adam and Joe.
Oh, the twins?
Yeah.
Yeah, Bethany's always talking about those two. I mean, she knocks about with them a fair bit.
Oh, I hope they're not leading her into mischief. I'm always telling them to behave, but do they listen?
Nah. That's okay. I mean, boys will be boys, after all. I think it's good that she, you know, mixes with the lads. She never had a bad word to say about them. I mean, not like that girl, Rebecca.
Oh, yeah, she sounds like a right one. Adam's always telling me about her.
Did you hear about Mitzi?
No.
The class hamster.
No.
The way Bethany tells it, and bear in mind that she has a very active, over-the-top imagination, so I can't be too sure what's true, what's not, but apparently Rebecca force-fed the hamster plasticine balls.
Oh my God, that's awful! Was it all right?
Well, Bethany did say that the teacher gave it a long kiss and rubbed its tummy a few times, and before she knew it, it was running around like normal.
Thank God for that. Mm. She sounds like a right one. You know, I couldn't listen to them if they told me that they'd force-fed the hamster something.
Yeah, same here. Still, Miss Dooley does sound like she's got it all under control. I mean, if you can give CPR to a hamster, I'm sure you can do anything.
Yeah.
So, twin boys then. I bet they keep you on your toes.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. They always have something, you know. I just don't know where they get the energy from. I don't get minutes to myself, you know, but yeah, I wouldn't change it.
Nor me. Well, I mean, I would, but...
Ah, here we are, reception on that. Oh, what is it?
Makes his directions. Oh, they were hopeless. It's like a bloody maze in here.
I shall have words when she arrives tomorrow.
Yes.
I'll not look a fool on my first parents' evening.
Evening.
Oh, good evening.
Hiya.
Evening.
Tell me, is there much of a wait? It's just I have a meeting at 8 and I really need to be back at my desk. A multi-million pound deal.
Well, I'm afraid so, mate. You see, I've been waiting here 5 minutes and this one...
Steph.
Sorry, where are my manners? Gilly. Well, Steph here, she's been waiting a while.
Oh.
Would you be a dear and let us go before you? Thomas has a really important Skype call at 8 and he really should be on time. His associates would look upon his tardiness most unfavourably.
Sorry, love, it doesn't really work like that. You should have booked an earlier appointment. We've all got to wait our turn.
Oh, but we did!
No, our nanny gave us terrible directions. We couldn't find the place, we missed our slot.
Yes, I'll certainly be having words when she arrives tomorrow.
So you're late?
Yeah, but we arrived here in good time. We just couldn't find where we were meant to be, could we, darling?
No, a minor hitch.
So is this your first time at the school, then?
Yes, it is. Seems rather, rudimentary.
Indeed. Now, this wasn't our first choice, not at all. We wanted to send Rebecca to St. David's in Chelmsford, mm-hmm. and we couldn't bear to send her away, could we, darling?
You, got any pets at your place?
Certainly not.
Good Lord, no.
Filthy things!
Yeah.
What with all the feces and such? Plus, Archie has allergies.
Yeah, Archie's our eldest. 12, strapping lad. Good head for business as well. He started a lunchtime sticker shop last week. He made an absolute fortune. I mean, buy low, sell high. That's what I always tell him. His terrible allergies, though. If he gets even a whiff of peanut butter, we have to take him straight to A&E. And you know, his head swells like a balloon.
Yes, that's enough, Thomas. I don't think they want to hear Archie's complete medical history.
What did you mean earlier when you were saying how it seems all rudimentary?
Well, I mean, look at it. I mean, the paintings on the wall, ill-defined, sloppy use of form and colour, and those posters. At 5, I could already count to 100 and backwards, too.
I think it's just a little simple for our tastes. St. David's, they have reception class reading music by the end of the year. Oh, nursery rhymes, that sort of thing, not symphonies. That's for year one.
Impressive. Still, it seems a bit much. You're only 5.
It's never too early to plant the seeds of culture. Look, that's what award-winning author and child development expert Dr. Lucille Rothing says, and I for one agree with her. Mm-hmm. Rebecca is enrolled in tap, ballet, contemporary dance, and is a keen player of the piano.
When we can get her to practice, that
is. Well, I've told Judith before, she just needs to be stern with her. Judith is our Rebecca's piano tutor. Oh, she charges 50 quid an hour. But she does come highly recommended by the dean at St. David's.
Yes, yes, it's his wife.
Hey, I bet this takes you back. Sitting outside the classroom, you know, waiting for the headmaster to give you a rollicking.
I think not. Thomas was a perfect student, weren't you, Thomas?
I was, but I had my moments. I mean, there was this one time I said that I'd eaten all of my vegetables so that I could move on to my treacle sponge, but I hadn't. I'd left the cauliflower and I just scooped it onto the floor when the dinner lady was breaking up a fight behind me. I mean, I was a sot back in those days. It's a miracle I'm so successful.
Did you hear that, Steph? Got a right bad one here.
You've never told me that story before. Why now? In front of strangers. Whatever will they think of us?
Well, you knew I had a bad streak when you married me. what do you do then?
I'm a storage expediter.
I see, sounds exciting. What does that entail?
Well, I load stock onto the back of a lorry. It's a posh way of saying a warehouse worker. Still, it keeps the wolves up away from the door. And... Mm. You?
I'm in property acquisitions. I buy and sell large estates. Surprisingly demanding work. Keeps me at the office until all hours. It's like I say to Mariana, commerce never sleeps.
Well, he never sees the children, such as his dedication to his work.
Nor do I, really. We really are a very productive family when it comes to our work.
And what is it that you do?
Me? I represent one of the leading beauty retailers. I've got a team of 50 sales reps behind me. My team is current county leader in terms of sales.
Are you with that forever lot?
Yeah.
Because I got some of that stuff and it brought me out in a rash.
Forever is a brand for the more discerning skin type. Our products don't suit just anyone.
Oh. So, what does your partner do?
Last I heard, an 8 to 10 stretch.
What did he do?
Armed robbery. Well, attempted, but he had priors. He knocked off a Greggs with a water pistol and a glove. The police arrested him in the bookies next door because a couple of witnesses saw him go in there. Yeah, he robbed them first thing in the morning, so the tills were empty. Reckon he could double his money by betting on the 12:20 at Kempton. Yeah, he weren't that bright.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like the smartest move. Do you see much of him?
What you mean on the inside? Nah, that ain't a place I want to take my kids. Besides, he was a waste of space. Yeah, we were long done before he pulled that stunt.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. It's dreadful luck.
And that ain't got nothing to do with luck, has it? He made his bed.
So, do you work?
No. My boys keep me busy enough.
What do you do for money, if I may ask?
I claim. That's all I can do.
You live on benefits.
Well, it ain't a dirty word, love. Me and my boys, we get by.
Can't you get a job?
Hang on a minute, let's not pry. Her business is her business.
No, it's all right. You know, it's easier said than done. Trying to get a job that pays a living wage and fits around my childcare needs, where there ain't many about. It's either take a job paying less than I claim now, or work all the hours God sends and never see my kids. Yeah, because I haven't got anyone to help with the boys. There's no one to pick them up before or after work. So I'm a bit stuck. I don't want to claim, but I do what I can for my boys.
As do we all.
You just listened to a piece of new writing written by Dan Weatherer called Parents, performed live at the Horse and Stables in Lambeth. The part of Gilly was played by Daniel Garcia, Tom was played by Tom Slatter, Steph Abigail Morgan, and Mariana was played by Natasha Colenso. And that brings us to the end of another edition of the Blackshaw Arts Hour for this week. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at Blackshaw Update and like us on Facebook, and we'll be with you in a fortnight bringing you more reviews and arts news from Wandsworth and Greater London.